Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Karrenton Harrison. To my right, it is the sports machine, Sean Levine. Directly in front of me on the ones and twos, our producer extraordinaire, Brandon Kiley. How's everybody doing today?
Doing well. I can tell you, I've never thought about buying a sexual enhancement pill at a gas station. Have you?
I have never thought about it before. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll answer all your fantasy football questions about the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll also talk about some of the moves and grooves that have been happening with your Kansas City Chiefs. So if you missed the story, this is from Jeff Passan. I'm still calling him friend of the show, who now works at ESPN, used to work at Yahoo Sports. The use of gas station sexual enhancement pills in baseball are so prevalent that Major League Baseball sent out a memo today warning players that their use could lead to positive PED tests, as at least two players have claimed so far this season. Sources tell ESPN, and there's a link to click on the story. I've not clicked on the story, so I'm going to assume one way or the other. How powerful are these sexual enhancement pills that they can show up on a professional sports team's PED list? Think about the things you could be taking that do not show up on PED list. What is in these things if you can test positive for a Major League Baseball PED test that you can go get at Quick Trip or Casey's General Store?
You would think that with that sort of an issue, you'd want to see a doctor. I don't know. I'm not one. I don't play one on the radio. Maybe the gas station is not the best way to go. I can tell you this much. It sounds powerful. It sounds like it does the job.
I mean, we've all stopped at one of those, like in the middle of nowhere, Grain Valley, where they got the little 25 cents. You put in 50 cents, you can get the like glow in the dark condoms.
Oh, yeah.
You put
yeah.
in 50, 75 cents, and you get these kind of pills. I mean, I had no clue. I mean, they say consult your doctor if, you know, you have an erection longer than 4 hours.
Is that what they say?
With this kind of stuff with the PED, you might have one for 12 hours. Why are you and Wachowski doing Blue Chew and you're not doing these gas station enzymes? That's what you need to be doing.
They haven't offered me an endorsement just yet, but for now, I'm going to stick with the Blue Chew reads.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll talk about Antonio Brown, whose helmet issue was on full display last night in Hard Knocks. But the Kansas City Chiefs have made some moves over the last 24 to 48 hours. We have not been here to discuss them. Well, now we can do so. Let's start with the Jeff Allen. Before we like get into the very serious part about Jeff Allen, because there is a very serious part to discuss with Jeff Allen, aside from Patrick Mahomes, does anybody have a better job in Kansas City than Jeff Allen? Think about Jeff Allen's job. Jeff Allen got to skip the entire training camp. Didn't have to come up with some helmet issue. Didn't have to freeze his feet. Got to skip the entire time in St. Joe. Last year, BK, when did they pick up Jeff Allen? It was like week 13 of the NFL season. He still would have got a Super Bowl ring if that's the case. You're telling me that you can get all the advantages of playing on a Super Bowl team and miss all the hard parts about playing on a Super Bowl team? Jeff Allen might have the second best job in Kansas City behind Patrick Mahomes.
It's a good gig. I think I'd rather be the backup to the backup for Patrick Mahomes, because you know that unless the S hits the fan, that guy has no chance of playing. Jeff Allen might actually play. Like, Jeff Allen might actually get on the field. He might actually have to earn his money. If the Chiefs keep a third quarterback, that guy's not seeing the field.
No, you're right, but at least Jeff Allen has the respect in the locker room. Like, you don't even know who the third guy is behind Patrick Mahomes. I assume he has no juice in the locker room. For you to keep coming back as often as Jeff Allen comes back, that means the team actually likes you. That means the guys in that locker room really respect you. Reed really likes you. Reed really wants to keep you around. Brett Veach really likes you. Like, Jeff Allen, if we're talking about respect and clout in that locker room, Jeff Allen might be high up.
That's how you see it. I think they see it as they need Jeff Allen. There's a reason why Jeff Allen was available. There's a reason why the Chiefs said bye-bye to him a season ago. I think the Chiefs went, we need you, so we'll take you. I don't think they went, wow, thank goodness Jeff Allen's available. That's going to make our team a whole lot better.
Well, I just started watching this show called Mindhunter on Netflix. I didn't know much about it, but Twitter had told me to check out this show called Mindhunter. It's early on in the show, so I haven't really formed an opinion yet, but it's about the FBI and it's about investigations. So I have my own drive investigation. They played one preseason game. Hours after that preseason game had concluded, they picked up Morris Claiborne because their secondary leaves a little bit to be desired. They played another preseason game week two against the Pittsburgh Steelers. We saw Cam Irving out there, and he left a lot to be desired, and then they went to go sign Jeff Allen. I think we are seeing, at least in the preseason, they are evaluating their team. All right, let's go into this preseason game. You play. We see what you do well. We see what we don't do well. Hey, Mo Claiborne's available. Let's go grab him. Hey, we need another offensive lineman. Jeff Allen knows the system, can seamlessly kind of get back into the swing of things on this team. We can go pick up Jeff Allen. I think it's very obvious what happened with the Chiefs over their first two preseason games. They played. They saw a need. They instantly went and tried to go fulfill that need.
And we'll talk about the addition also of DeAnthony Thomas here momentarily. But are any of those moves that actually help the team, are those just Band-Aids when the team actually needs surgery at those positions? Adding Mo Claiborne, I get it. There wasn't a much better option at the time. I'm not exactly sure how DeAnthony Thomas was either available or why the Chiefs re-signed him. In the case of Jeff Allen, I would say a lot of the same stuff. Those are all Band-Aids, man. This team needs some surgery. They're in really good shape, but they're not in perfect shape. And those moves are Band-Aids that I think once they get ripped off, I don't know how much it's going to actually help the football
team. It's August 21st. You're only getting Band-Aids at this point.
That's a fair point.
The time to go get serious surgery is free agency time. You went out and did that the safety position with Tyrann Mathieu. You went out and did that with Bashaud Breeland when you signed him to a contract. The time to get surgery is in the NFL draft. You went to pick up Mecole Hardman. You picked up Juan Thornhill. At this point, you're getting guys that other teams don't want or they could not make their roster. And I got all the respect in the world for Jeff Allen. I like Jeff Allen a lot. But he's probably at this point, he's a sixth or seventh, maybe an eighth offensive lineman. You want a solidified depth at that position, you go pick him up. DeAnthony Thomas, at this point in his career, is probably a special teams guy. He's not going to help you in the return game, really. He's not going to help you as a receiver. But if you need a guy who can play 50% of your snaps in special teams because you just lost the guy in Marcus Kemp, that's the kind of signing that you make. So I'm with you. These are Band-Aid kind of signings. But at this point in the season, that's all that really exists.
Yeah, and I think DeAnthony Thomas is a direct effect of Marcus Kemp going down, because Marcus Kemp, DeAnthony Thomas essentially kind of fill the same role. I want to know, how far does the domino fall when the Chiefs sign DeAnthony Thomas? What other guys does that affect? Because while he's going to be mostly a special teams player, I feel like the Chiefs at this point have like three DeAnthony Thomases, right? They've got Mecole Hardman, they've got Tremont Smith, they've got the actual DeAnthony Thomas. At this point, they've got a lot of guys that fill the same need. I just don't exactly see what the point of that was yesterday.
Really quick, before we move on to DeAnthony Thomas, yeah. I got a lot of thoughts on that. I want to make this last point on Jeff Allen really quickly. When I look at their offensive line, I think we pretty much know what it's going to be. Like, there are no more roster battles that are available. We agree. We know five offensive linemen that are going to make the team. Eric Fisher, Andrew Wiley, Austin Ryder, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, Mitchell Schwartz. We agree all five of those guys are making the team. We also agree that Cam Irving is going to make the team. We also agree that Jeff Allen, like, you do not make this move to go get Jeff Allen if he's not going to make the team. I assume that Nick Allegretti is going to make the team. They just drafted him this year. I assume that they like him. And I assume that Khalil McKenzie is going to make the team. What's that, eight? Nine? And at that point, that's it for the offensive line. I think we pretty much know who's making the team on this offensive line.
That's a lot of numbers. I'm not sure Khalil McKenzie is going to make this team. I agree with everybody else that you said. And that's not an issue with this football team. We said heading into last year, how good is the line going to be? Can they keep Patrick Mahomes in one piece? That wasn't a problem last year. Through camp, it hasn't been an issue. And the more and more I look at this offensive line, it's actually a strength of this football team. Not like the quarterback or the wide receiver core or anything like that, but it's a pretty good offensive line compared to what it could be in the NFL.
I mean, they spent a lot of resources on the offensive line. Look at it. Eric Fisher, number one overall pick, second contract. Mitchell Schwartz, you went out and acquired him from the Cleveland Browns, second contract. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, second contract. Other guys, you spend draft picks. Like, it makes sense to me that when you spend high draft picks and you spend high money on something, that you get big-time production from it. The Chiefs, because of the rookie contracts that they have when it comes to Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes, it allows you flexibility and to spend more in other places. They spend a lot of that money on the offensive and defensive line.
I think they did a great job building this offensive line. And, of course, nobody's going to compare it to the, what was it, John Tate, Willie Rove, Casey Wigman, Brian Waters. I'm forgetting somebody on that line. I shouldn't. It's not that line. Nobody's going to compare it to that line, but I think the line is good enough where it's not going to hurt this football team, and I think we're starting to see that Patrick Mahomes feels comfortable with those guys. They've got a couple of really good tackles. If I start to point to groups of positions that I'm concerned about, the offensive line is not one of them.
When it goes to DeAnthony Thomas, to kind of push the conversation forward just a little bit, with DeAnthony Thomas, to me it seems very simple. Like, his is very straightforward to me. They just lost Marcus Kemp, who was going to be a valuable member of special teams. He played last year 54% of the snaps, so now they had an opening. They lost Demetrius Harris, that we might talk about him as a backup tight end, but was their number one special teams player in terms of being on the field. Anthony Sherman was their number two. He's also back this season. And Marcus Kemp was their number three. He's out for the season. So I think that Dave Toe probably has three or four roster spots that he has 100% control over. So when he goes to Andy Reid, he goes to Brett Veach and say, hey, in order for my special teams to work, I need DeAnthony Thomas. Go get him. I think it's that simple, and they go sign DeAnthony Thomas. I think this is a special teams move, not a jet sweep, not a kick returner, not a punt return kind of move. But if DeAnthony Thomas is now, I believe, a lock to make this roster, that means that either Byron Pringle or Cody Thompson are not a lock to make this roster. A couple days ago, we thought that now both of those guys were going to make this team. I don't think that's the case anymore. Either Byron Pringle or Cody Thompson will be playing football somewhere else in 2019.
Or not playing at all. I think Byron Pringle, unfortunately, is probably going to be the odd man out because Cody Thompson throughout camp has outplayed him to this point. I was asking you this earlier, and maybe you just answered it with special teams. Is that the difference between DeAnthony Thomas and Mecole Hardman? Because the way that I see it, you got a couple of guys that fill the same role. What can DeAnthony Thomas do that Mecole Hardman can't?
I don't think you want your number two second-round pick. I don't think you want him playing 150 special team snaps. I think they're going to use him in the offense, where I think that DeAnthony Thomas isn't going to be on the field in offense, and his primary role is going to be special teams. So that's what I think the big difference for these two guys are. Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we'll talk a little fantasy football from the Chiefs' perspective. But first, Antonio Brown's helmet issue was on full display last night on Hard Knocks. We'll give you our reaction coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. We'll get into Hard Knocks coming up momentarily. I wanted to make this real quick special teams point that I know is not the sexiest conversation in the world, but I think is very important when it comes to making the Kansas City Chiefs and kind of identifying who's going to make the team. So last year, these were the guys who had the five most snaps on special teams. Demetrius Harris, Anthony Sherman, Marcus Kemp, Dorian O'Daniel, and Ben Neiman. So Demetrius Harris now plays for the Browns. Marcus Kemp is now out for the season. These other three guys are on the team. It seems very simple, but let's make the point anyway. If you're not going to be a major contributor on the field, like we agree, Dorian O'Daniel would not appear today to be a major contributor on the field, or Ben Neiman, we're not really factoring him into the defense. Man, you better be helping in special teams. Like DeAnthony Thomas, we agree, is not going to be a very big factor in this team's offense.
If
like
at
he
all.
He is the ninth offensive player on this team, 10th offensive player on this team. But he can play 320 special team snap for you. He can be an elite level gunner, and Tobe goes to bat for him. That makes you on the team. So Cody Thompson might be the better receiver for this team, or Byron Pringle might be the better receiver for this team. They don't need another receiver. They probably need an elite special teams player. And I'm not calling DeAnthony Thomas elite, but if Tobe likes DeAnthony Thomas more than Cody Thompson or Byron Pringle on special teams, then DeAnthony Thomas is making that team over Cody Thompson.
There you go. And you're right. It's something that we don't talk about a lot, but it's something the Chiefs excel at, whether you're talking about kicker or punter or Dave Tobe himself or punt return or kick return. The Chiefs have put themselves the last few years with really good field position. Again, it's something that we don't talk about a lot, but it gives them another advantage where they start with what you could argue one of the five best offenses in the history of the league.
So yesterday I was fired up to watch Hard Knocks because I thought they kind of danced around the helmet issue in episode two, but episode three, they were going to get to it. They even ended episode two with showing Antonio Brown's helmet. So you were thinking, all right, episode three, they are going to really get into the helmet issue with Antonio Brown. Here's what John Gruden had to say yesterday on HBO's Hard Knocks.
We've known the whole time.
Yeah.
He had frostbite. He took 4 or 5 days to get it checked out. And we knew about the grievance since the first day of OTAs, which we did. You know, I don't know what the story is, you know, the story is around here.
Trying to find an helmet in the last 10 years, the same model.
Tried everything, really. I give the guy credit for standing up for what he believes in. Everybody else does in this country.
Okay. Let's start here.
Can we start here? Did you see the frostbite? It wasn't that bad. I've had worse frostbite than that.
Well, I mean,
I'm not an NFL player. My feet aren't as important to me as they are to Antonio Brown. The frostbite was not that bad. You've seen the pictures, right?
Yes. I think he's saying you've had worse frostbite than Antonio Brown.
Yeah, a couple of different times.
Are you going to tell us the story?
Okay, time out.
We've got to take a detour.
You want the descriptions? Growing up, I used to go skiing a lot in Colorado, and at times when you're a kid.
Did you not wear socks?
No, I wore socks, but sometimes every inch of your skin is not protected like it should be, and I can't say I've ever gotten it on my feet.
I can't say that I've ever had that experience, actually. Every inch of my skin was pretty much underneath clothing whenever I went skiing.
I've had worse frostbite on my hands multiple times than Antonio Brown had on his feet. That was no big deal. Get out there, man. This guy just finds everything to complain about.
I want to I'm with you on Antonio Brown. I've never had frostbite. You know me. I'm not trying to stay outside that long. I'm definitely not going with skiing or snowboarding or any of those cold weather activities. So I've never had to deal with this
before. He described his frostbite as if his feet were circumcised. His words, not mine. I was expecting there to be like no skin on his feet at all. It looked like he got scratched by a cat a little bit. Like, toughen up, bro. Get out there. You got a little bit of frostbite. Play some football.
I do have some breaking news. I'll go ahead and pass this along real quick. From Ian Rappaport, at this point, Chargers running back Melvin Gordon's holdout is expected to continue into the season. Contract talks have not progressed as he had hoped, and he will continue to train in Florida for the foreseeable future.
Here's the thing on these holdouts when it comes to the running back. Running backs are in a very, very weird spot. So let's look at it like this. We agree that Ezekiel Elliott is probably the best running back in the NFL.
Yeah.
With what's happening to Todd Gurley right now, Ezekiel Elliott, in my opinion, is the best running back in the NFL. If you're Melvin Gordon, I don't think he's the best running back in the NFL, but he's been good. We also can agree that if you're a running back, you are deemed to be very replaceable, and you have a small shelf life of being a really productive player and really maximizing your earning potential. And the in between the rock and the hard place that I think these running backs are falling under is if you're Ezekiel Elliott, let's say that you go along and you say, hey, Jerry, you know what? I apologize. I want to do what's best for the team. I'm showing up. And we agree this year they go give Ezekiel Elliott his 280 carries and he has his 70 catches or 70 touches or targets, however you want to put it. And he touches the ball 320 times this year, right? And let's say that he then signs up for another year of that because his contract doesn't expire for another two seasons. He says, hey, you know what? I'm not going to hold out. I'm going to show up. I'm going to do everything in my power to help the Dallas Cowboys win. And then they do the exact same thing again. You know what will then happen at the end of those 2 years?
What?
People will then use the him showing up and him doing everything for the Cowboys as a negative to not give him his money. Like, it's kind of in between a rock and a hard place. Like, I was talking to someone on Twitter yesterday, and they was like, he has no leverage. The leverage, if you're Ezekiel Elliott, is you better hope the Cowboys lose. Because if the Cowboys get off to a 1-2 start, and they are in danger of missing the playoffs, and you are the difference, you will get your money. If you're Melvin Gordon, that's what you better hope. You better hope that the Chargers start off the season 1-3, because if they start off 3-1, you lose all your leverage.
See, I think the leverage is, does team need certain player to win a Super Bowl? And when it comes to the quarterback position, oftentimes they cave because the answer ends up being yes. In the case of Melvin Gordon, I don't think even the staunchest Chargers fan would tell you we can't win a championship without Melvin Gordon. He's not that good. He's probably the, 12th, 13th best running back in football. For the Cowboys, they have no chance of winning a Super Bowl without Ezekiel Elliott. So I think that in a weird way, he actually does have not a ton of leverage, but more leverage than a normal running back in the situation would.
I think Ezekiel Elliott has as much leverage as you can have at the running back position.
I bet they cave. What are the chances he plays for the Cowboys week one? Better than 50%?
I don't think he's going to play, honestly.
Oh, I bet he does. I bet the Cowboys cave before week one, recognizing, and I don't think they have a chance to win the Super Bowl with or without him, but they think they do. They realize how important he is. I'd take that bet. I bet that he is there week one.
Yeah, I don't think that they are caving. I think he's the one that caves.
Really?
I think whenever we see the contract, I think we see that Ezekiel Elliott takes a little bit less and the Cowboys win that negotiation. The Cowboys seem willing to win this game of chicken because most of the time teams win this game of chicken. The only way I think Ezekiel Elliott wins, the only way that I think Melvin Gordon ends, at least with what they're asking for, is if the teams get off to a bad start. Because we agree, if the Cowboys get off to a 3-1 start, and our belief is they need Ezekiel Elliott to win, and they prove the first four games they don't need Ezekiel Elliott to win, Ezekiel Elliott will then have to show because he does not have a choice in that context. That's the only thing you really have to do in this scenario.
Yeah, and again, I don't think that either one of them have a ton of leverage, but if we're comparing the two situations, Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott, Melvin Gordon ain't playing. Like, this Melvin Gordon situation might end up like Le'Veon Bell, which almost never happens, where player threatens to sit out, and he actually does. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the road it ends up going down with Melvin Gordon. Whether it's the Cowboys caving or Zeke caving in, I think he's going to play week one.
I want to make this point really quickly on Antonio Brown. Let me play the audio really quick if you missed it. Here was John Gruden last night on Hard Knocks.
We've known the whole time.
Yeah.
He had frostbite. He took 4 or 5 days to get it checked out. And we knew about the grievance since the first day of OTAs, which we did. You know, I don't know what the story, you know, the story is around here.
He's been trying to find him at home for the last 10 years, the same model.
Tried everything, really. I give the guy credit for standing up for what he believes in. Everybody else does it in this country.
Antonio Brown, I'm not giving him credit for standing up for what he believes in. He is not fighting some social justice here. He also is the only one doing it. Believe me, we watch a lot of NFL football. There are a lot of other really courageous NFL players. There's only one player in the NFL that is making the helmet issue a big deal. There's other NFL players that don't seem to like it. I can play you audio from Joe Thomas, who I think is going to be in the Hall of Fame at some point, saying, hey, I didn't like it, but I had to do what I had to do to get out there on the field. I'm not giving Antonio Brown any credit in this context, especially when I think the Raiders have bent over backwards to try to help him. That's what Hard Knocks showed. Hard Knocks shows that at least John Gruden has been as supportive as a head coach can be when your best player is not coming to work and not coming to practice. He's sitting there and talking to Drew Rosenhaus, and Drew Rosenhaus is saying, man, we should have handled this a little bit differently. And Gruden's patting him on the back and trying to encourage him and tell him how great he is and not really getting on him, at least in front of the rest of the team with the information that we had yesterday. I really think what had happened is Gruden and Mayock are on two completely different sides when it comes to the Antonio Brown helmet. One thing I think to point out is, if you watch Hard Knocks last year in depth, they showed Dorsey and Hugh Jackson communicating all the time. They did not show one single time that Mayock and John Gruden had a conversation about the Antonio Brown incident, which we agree is the biggest issue with their team. I think that Gruden and Mike Mayock have two completely different ways of going about it. Mayock went about it where, hey, we've exhausted all our options. He needs to get his ass in here in camp. And Gruden's giving him the tough love and, hey, we need you here. Come back and play here. I thought it was very interesting how they painted the Antonio Brown issue yesterday on Hard Knocks. And when you think about it, hearing Antonio Brown, this was the only thing he said about his helmet yesterday that they included. They never...
What the hell was that?
I
still don't know what that was.
They said his lid was ugly.
Okay.
They never at any point had Antonio Brown talk about the safety or why he feels so passionately about it. The only part they left in, whether it's the Raiders, whether it's NFL Network, I don't know who edits Hard Knocks, but I assume a lot of people see it before we see it. It was very interesting. That was the part that they included yesterday in the Antonio Brown helmet saga.
Is it just me, or does it seem like his teammates still like him? Because if I'm his teammate...
He was super popular yesterday.
He's the most popular guy on the team, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. If I'm one of these other guys, think about all the stories that we see on Outside the Lines or E60 or wherever, of football player that his entire life, all he's wanted to do is make the team, make an NFL roster, prove to his family, prove to himself. And then you've got Antonio Brown, who's complaining about a helmet. It's just crazy to me that this story has had so much legs. What was the worst offseason move for the Raiders the last couple of years? Trading away Khalil Mack or signing up Antonio Brown?
Trading away Khalil Mack. I think Khalil Mack's a once-in-a-generational player and is probably going to the Hall of Fame. Coming up in just a little bit, we will get into some Chiefs fantasy questions. Plus, Matthew Berry answers the question, would you take Patrick Mahomes in the first round of your fantasy draft? We'll let Matthew Berry explain it to you. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
I want to read this text to you really quickly. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we will all take a minute. Plus, we'll get to a brand spanking new Levine's List, and we'll give you a chance to win a prize in today's pop quiz. Text line 69306. Carrington, you've been mentioning the Hall of Fame a lot lately. How many current players do you think are going in the Hall of Fame? I wrote down 10 off the top of my head without really thinking about it or doing any research that I think will be in the Hall of Fame at some point, and I think are locks to be in the Hall of Fame. Brady, Aaron Donald, Larry Fitzgerald, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, J.J. Watt, Eli Manning, Adrian Peterson. I think Antonio Brown is a lock to be in the Hall of Fame at some point. Those are 10 guys I think right now currently that play in the NFL locks to be in the Hall of Fame.
Julio Jones, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably put him in there. I just off the top of my head, those were 10 guys I had. And not counting guys that I think that could have been, like, I think Patrick Mahomes has a chance. I mean, right now, today, based on what they've accomplished in the NFL, I think they've done enough to go to the Hall of Fame.
Did you say Eli?
Yeah. I think Eli gets in.
I don't know if he's a lock. I think Eli. He's going to end up in the Hall of Fame, but he's just not. I wouldn't be surprised if it takes him a while to get in.
I would be surprised if it takes Eli more than 5 tries to get in. Like, some guys we agree, like Brady's getting in the first time. I think that J.J. Watt probably gets in the first time. I think that Aaron Rodgers and Breeze gets in the first time. I think Eli maybe gets in like the third time.
You think Eli or Phillip Rivers gets in first?
Eli, absolutely. I think it's wrong, but I think Eli absolutely gets in first because of the rings.
It's just crazy. Phillip Rivers had a better career, but you're right, doesn't have the rings.
I'd put in Von Miller, too. Someone just said Von Miller. I would include Von Miller. I think Von Miller eventually gets into the NFL Hall of Fame as well. I don't think he's a first ballot guy, but I think he gets in at some point. I think he's kind of like how Ty Law is. I think it takes him a little bit, but
I think you mention Adrian Peterson?
Yeah, I have Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, I think Von Miller's an absolute first ballot lock. I think he's one of the best defensive players this generation.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he has to wait maybe 1 or 2 years, but I think he gets in rather
quickly. What
about quickly.
Luke Kuechly?
I don't think Luke Kuechly's going into
the Hall
of
Fame. I think he needs more time.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I don't think based on what he's done right now, he's going in the Hall of Fame. I don't know what kind of years he's going
to
have.
He's on the track, though. Sean, I think I agree with you on that. I think he's on track to do so. He just needs a few more years.
Frank Gore. Isn't he still in the league? Frank Gore?
he's going to be a really interesting case. He's Curtis Martin 2.0, basically.
Yeah, I actually think Frank Gore eventually gets
in. Those dudes always end up in the NFL. His numbers are there.
Coming up in a little bit, we will get into a brand spanking new Levine's List. We'll also give you a chance to win a prize in today's pop quiz. But, Sean, you got some fantasy questions, my man.
I got 5 fantasy football questions for you, fellas. Number one. How do you know when it's time to pick Patrick Mahomes? And don't worry about if you're in a PPR league or you got 2 quarterbacks or any of that. I just want to know.
That does matter, though.
Right, but I'm just saying, in general, BK, when do you know it's time to pick Patrick Mahomes? Because we all agree he's probably going to end up the number one quarterback. In almost any league, in any scoring system, last year he was the best player. But most of the time you don't take quarterbacks that high. So when is it time to pull the trigger on Patrick Mahomes?
I think it's very simple. It's when you're not comfortable picking any of the other guys that are available at the more important positions. There's a lot of really good quarterbacks this year in fantasy football. I was looking at this last night, Sean. If you're looking at the Bucs, for instance, they have a top 10 receiver, a top 15 receiver in Chris Godwin, and a top 5 tight end this year. If you have all of those guys, you would imagine that the quarterback would be selected really high too, right?
Yeah.
It'd be like if Patrick Mahomes was not selected high, but you've got all these guys around him that are. Well, Jameis Winston is the 14th quarterback off the board this year on average. So you've got, if he's the 14th quarterback, there's just a lot of good options is what I'm trying to say.
That was my theory last year on Jared Goff, and that's the one thing on my fantasy team that actually worked out pretty well. I didn't love him. I love the weapons around him, and it worked out pretty good.
So the reason why I bring that up is because there's a lot of good quarterbacks, so you don't want to reach too far on Patrick Mahomes. So by doing so, I would say I typically am comfortable late 3rd, early 4th. So the guys that are coming off the board around then. Derrick Henry, Amari Cooper, Mark Ingram, Brandon Cook, Sony Michel. Those are the guys that are going off the board right around that area. I would rather have Patrick Mahomes and lock in what I believe is going to be the number one quarterback than any of those players.
Do you want Sammy Watkins on your team is my second question. Again, it matters where he's drafted. I just wonder if you can get a good deal on Sammy Watkins, right? If he slides in your draft for whatever reason, should you take a flyer on him knowing his injury concerns?
I'm taking a flyer on Sammy Watkins. I would not build a team around Sammy Watkins. If you're telling me that he's still available there and you can get a number 2 receiver on a high-powered offense, then I understand taking the flyer. I don't draft fantasy players. I would assume you probably wouldn't take him in your first 5 to 7 Correct. Rounds. You'd probably take him a little bit later.
So right now he's going in the 8th round. The guys going around him, Dante Pettis, Marvin Jones, Josh Gordon, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Geronimo Allison.
I'd much rather have Josh Gordon in fantasy.
Marquez Valdez thing you just said?
He's the number 2 receiver for the Packers. I actually think I would rather have Valdez-Scantling than Sammy Watkins this year, but that's probably it around this list. I think Josh Gordon's going to move way up now that he's actually been reinstated. He's probably going to end up going in like the 4th round of most drafts, but among that group of players, I'd probably have Sammy Watkins ranked basically 2nd behind Marquez Valdez-Scantling.
All right, guys, if you're picking, let's say, at the end of the 1st round, top of the 2nd round in a typical draft, and both Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce are still on the board, and let's say this is like your 1st or 2nd pick, so you don't already have a wide receiver or a tight end, which guy are you taking off the board first, Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce?
I would take Travis Kelce off the board first because there are way fewer tight ends in the NFL that are productive than wide receivers. There's only probably 6 tight ends that can give you production in the NFL. There's 25 wide receivers that can give you good production. Now, maybe not Tyreek Hill, but there's a big drop-off from tight end number 5 and tight end 15. There's not a substantial drop-off from wide receiver 15 to wide receiver 5 in the NFL.
I tend to agree with CDOT. The one thing that I would say, though, is if you're like me and you do believe there's a chance that Tyreek Hill ends up as the best receiver in football this year, you should probably side with that side of things. I was before training camp going to Travis Kelce 100% as the answer to this question, Sean. I'm waffling on that. I love Tyreek Hill this year. I think he's in for a monster season for the Chiefs, but because of the scarcity of the tight ends, I'd probably still lean Kelce.
I love the long touchdowns that you get from a guy like Tyreek Hill. I think there's a chance that Travis Kelce doesn't just lead this team in touchdowns, but lead the league in touchdowns. So if it were me, I'd take Travis Kelce off the board. And it's something that I'm considering because I think if you include Travis Kelce as a pass catcher, not just a wide receiver or a tight end, he should be one of the 10, 12 best pass catchers off the board. So it's certainly going to be a debate in your league if it comes down to Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce. What about Damian Williams? I'm curious. Do you guys see Damian Williams this year as a risk or as a guy that every running back in Andy Reid's system always has fantasy success? How do you view Damian Williams this season?
Can I go back really quickly with something you said about Travis Kelce? I'm a little bit surprised you think he could lead the NFL in touchdowns, given the fact that he's only had double-digit touchdowns one time in his career. I think he has a good year. I'd be a little bit surprised if Kelce led the NFL in touchdowns
this
season.
Correct me if I'm wrong. He's only played with Pat one year, and that's the year he had double-digit touchdowns, right?
Yeah, just 10, though. I mean, he didn't have 15 last year. I'm just saying the one time he's at double-digit, and given the fact that his quarterback threw 50 last season, I'd be surprised if Kelce got to 15 touchdowns this season, especially given all the other options that they have offensively. When it comes to Damian Williams, I'd probably draft him second round, third round. I think some people, it kind of depends on. Locally, if you want Damian Williams, it's probably earlier. Nationally, if you want Damian Williams, I think you can wait just a little bit. I think nationally, there's a perception that it's going to be running back by committee, so maybe Damian Williams has been devalued a little bit over the last 6 weeks. But I still think he's this team's number one running back. I think he's going to be pretty productive this year. I'd probably set the over-under on touchdowns at Damian Williams at 9.5 and probably take the over and feel good.
I think it's around that range. Like late second round, early third is probably around the place where I'm wanting to take him. Somewhere around where Leonard Fournette, Kerryon Johnson, right after those guys go. I mean, everybody else that's a running back around that spot also comes with a lot of risk. Melvin Gordon's going around there. Aaron Jones, we don't know if he can hold up for over the course of a full season. Devontae Freeman missed like more than half of the season last year. Josh Jacobs is a rookie. I think there's a lot of risk as if you're taking a running back around that spot. I like Damian Williams more than any of the others.
Melvin Gordon and Ezekiel Elliott are screwing up fantasy drafts all around the country right now. Last question. We talked about Pat. We all agree he'd be the first quarterback off of anybody's fantasy football board. Who should be second, guys? If you don't get Pat as your fantasy football quarterback, who do you want as your signal caller for your fantasy football team?
Baker Mayfield is the answer to this question. I think Odell Beckham is about to have an incredible year. And with all the weapons that he has, I would be on that Baker train. Now, I'm with you. I don't know if the gap between Baker and the number 7 fantasy quarterback is going to be a big gap. I think Baker has a really big year this year. I would take Baker Mayfield.
I would go to Deshaun Watson. I think the rushing yards is what separates him from a guy like Baker Mayfield or Aaron Rodgers. And I think those are the other answers that you could go with here. Deshaun Watson's a threat to run. The other guys are not. And so because of that, I think he's going to end up with more over the course of the season in terms of fantasy points. Baker might have more value in terms of being a quarterback. I think Deshaun Watson is the better fantasy quarterback for this year.
I would go Aaron Rodgers, and I would run as fast as I can the opposite direction of Andrew Luck. I want nothing to do with that guy. Even if he's healthy, like you don't want to deal with that every single week. I would run as fast and as far as I possibly can.
I was listening to Matthew Berry. He thinks that Odell Beckham could have the best fantasy year we've ever seen from a wide receiver. I think angry, motivated, finally playing on a good team, best quarterback situation he's ever played in, Odell Beckham could have a really monster year. And I would just want some part of that if I was a picking in a fantasy league. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a brand spanking new Levine's List. We'll also give you a chance to win a prize in today's pop quiz. And we'll all take a minute. A lot to get into, not a lot of time. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2-6.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 5 minutes, we'll get into a brand spanking younger players in two completely different ways. We'll get into that coming up at 3 o'clock. But first, BK, let's take a minute. So yesterday, Carly Lloyd, she plays for the women's soccer team. She kicked a 55-yard field goal yesterday, and it's got everybody talking. It's got people like Justin Tucker saying that she can get a chance in the league. Gil Brandt said, quote, who's in the NFL Hall of Fame, I'd give her an honest tryout if I were the Bears. Which makes me think this question. How far away are we from an NFL football player that is a woman? If you think about the devaluing of kickoffs the way that it is right now, You maybe don't need to have a kicker who has a strong leg on kickoffs. Maybe your punter can do it. But if you've got a kicker that you think is reliable and they only kick the field goals, I think we're getting to that point in the NFL where that could realistically work. I actually don't think we're that far away from them just removing kick returns altogether and them just taking the ball at the 20 or the 25. Some of the women's soccer players, I don't think it's that crazy to think we are maybe 10 years away from at least one of them having the opportunity to be a kicker for an NFL team. That's my minute for the day.
They made a movie about that about 25 years ago, probably. You ever seen Wildcats, I believe it was called?
No, I have not seen it.
I think Kathy Ireland is the female kicker.
I think that's
movie?
Unnecessary Roughness.
Oh, yeah, Unnecessary Roughness. Yeah.
Wildcats is a different movie, yeah. But I think that's the movie you're talking
Which
about.
Which movie has the female kicker?
I think it's Unnecessary Roughness with Sinbad is okay. In that movie.
I probably should have known if I brought it up. But BK, give me a minute. I was checking out the top 10 picks. Actually, NFL.com brought this to my attention because they graded the 9 picks ahead of Patrick Mahomes. And I never want to say somebody should lose their job, but if you're those general managers that passed up on Patrick Mahomes, maybe you should think about a different profession. Number one, Myles Garrett went to Cleveland. That was a good pick. NFL.com gave that pick an A. Mitchell Trubisky is where it starts to go south. Think about the Bears and how good they would be right now with that defense, that head coach, if they had Patrick Mahomes instead. They're just a average to a little bit above average football team because they have Mitchell Trubisky. The third pick, some guy I've never heard of. Solomon Thomas was the third overall pick in 2017. You can imagine the 49ers are regretting that pick. Number four was Leonard Fournette. That pick's worked out okay. I think if the Jags could go back, they probably would have taken a running back. The fifth pick was Corey Davis. That hasn't worked out at all. Jamal Adams went sixth to the Jets. That was a nice pick. Mike Williams was the seventh pick. The Chargers wide receiver, that's worked out pretty well. Christian McCaffrey is the one team that I think, even if they could go back on it, obviously they would take Patrick Mahomes, but the Panthers already have Cam Newton in place. Christian McCaffrey was a great pick. John Ross was pick number 9. The pick right ahead of Patrick Mahomes was John Ross, who's done nothing in the NFL. And then, of course, at number 10, Patrick Mahomes. Those other GMs maybe need to reconsider what they're doing. And that's my minute for today.
I just think we see this all the time. I mean, think about how many people passed on Russell Wilson, who I think is going to be in the Hall of Fame at some point. I mean, a lot of teams that needed quarterbacks had the opportunity to take Russell Wilson, and only one team took him. That just, man, evaluating and scouting quarterbacks is hard. What I don't understand more than anything is I don't know how you watched Patrick Mahomes in college and watched Mitch Trubisky in college and came to the conclusion that Mitch Trubisky was better.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know how you watched Deshaun Watson in college. I mean, it's not like that's revisionist history. We all knew that at the time that was the case. Like, I watched a lot of Clemson. I didn't watch a whole lot of North Carolina, but I at least saw a couple games. I don't know how you watch college football of two players that play in the exact same conference and come to the conclusion that Mitch Trubisky was better than
I wouldn't have blamed the Bears for taking Deshaun Watson. That would have been a fine pick. That's going to be an argument their entire career, and obviously Pat's gotten off to a better start than Deshaun Watson, but we're going to continuously hear that. The Bears thought that Mitchell Trubisky was a better pick than both those guys. Not so much.
Yeah, I'm with you. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either, my guy.
Fantasy football season is officially upon us. You just heard our opinions on the Chiefs when it comes to fantasy. I'll go ahead and give you my suggestions for what you should do in the first round today. The top 3 picks are very simple. You're either going Barkley, Kamara, or McCaffrey. You can decide which of those 3 you feel most comfortable with. There is no wrong pick. I can listen to the argument for any of the 3, whether you pick first, second, or third. The 4th pick is where things get a little interesting. If you're comfortable with the risk of Ezekiel Elliott holding out, you should take him because he has easily the highest upside of any player that's going to be left on the board. But if you're not, that's where I think you start considering either DeAndre Hopkins or Davante Adams. Those are the 2 receivers that could be in play for the first pick. The first round is starting to get interesting because it's starting to revert back to what we've seen in years past. There are now 5 other running backs that are going in the first round. It's David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Nick Chubb, James Conner, and Todd Gurley. In my opinion, this means there's even more value for you if you're on the back end of the first round and you're going to go receiver. You could start a draft with Julio Jones and Tyreek Hill or Odell Beckham or Michael Thomas. I would go that route. I actually like the way that it looks better if you're picking 10th through 12th. If you go receiver, receiver, then if you take a running back with one of those 2 picks. That's my minute for today.
Coming up in just a little bit, we will give you a chance to win a prize in today's pop quiz. But as we do every day at this time, it's time to get to a brand spanking new Levine's List.
So I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen the new Head & Shoulders commercial featuring one Patrick Mahomes and Troy Polamalu. Can we agree that as much as we in this room like Patrick Mahomes, Polamalu's got the better hair, right?
Yes, Troy Polamalu has better hair than a lot of people.
Polamalu's got the best hair. most people, every people. He's got the best hair in the history of the NFL, and it's not even close.
Oh, I didn't know we were talking about. I thought we were talking about all people, like, on the earth, not just people in the NFL. I'm with you. If we're saying only comparing NFL players, he and Jeremy Shockey might be one and two.
So I came up with my top 10 favorite sports commercials of all time. Now, I left the Sports Center commercials off the list because those are always great. These are commercials that either have something to do with sports or featured athletes. Number 10, the Under Armour, we must protect this house. Number 9, I don't remember what this was for. Peyton Manning, maybe you can help me, C-Dot. Cut that meat. Cut that meat. You guys remember that commercial?
I do remember. I don't remember who it was for, though.
We'll just make something up and say it was for Subway. Number 8, Tiger Woods. It was a Nike.
It was MasterCard. It was a Peyton Manning commercial.
That's the problem with most of these commercials. You don't even know what these people are pubbing. Like, Cut That Meat was a MasterCard commercial? Who knew? Number 8, Tiger Woods, when he does all the golf ball tricks. That was a Nike commercial probably 5 or 6 years ago. Number 7, the entire Bone Nose Nike campaign. Number 6, best sports commercial of all time. See that? Do you remember the Michael Vick experience?
I do remember the Michael Vick experience.
I was young when that came out, and I always thought, if this was an actual ride at Disney World, I'd be first in line. Like, Space Mountain has nothing on the Michael Vick experience. Number 5, BK, I'm need your help again. Charles Barkley, the commercial where he said that he was not a role model. All I remember is it was a big-time commercial featuring Charles Barkley. I have no idea what product he was pushing.
It was the Nike tennis shoe, yeah.
Ah, there we go.
I don't know how BK would know that. He's 23.
He has something called the internet. You've heard of it, right?
Yeah, okay. No, it's a Nike television
Number
shoe
4, Discount Double Check. Discount Double Check. Number 3, Little Penny and Chris Rock. Remember those commercials?
Little Penny? Remember those.
You can't guard me. The Secret Service can't guard me. Number 2, the McDonald's commercial featuring Larry Bird and Michael Jordan playing a game of horse for a Big Mac. Everybody remembers that one. Off the lights, off the ceiling, off the rafters, nothing but net. And my favorite sports commercial of all time, the Gatorade Be Like Mike. Oh, I want to be like Mike. And that was my top 10 favorite sports commercials of all time.
Was a little disappointed that the Nike basketball commercials were not included. Remember the one where it was for the Nike Shox, where it was like, boom, 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 boom.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Those were cool.
Where the only people are dribbling.
Yeah, doing a cool dribble. Yeah, those were really cool. I was a little disappointed that didn't make it. One of my favorite Gatorade commercials, remember it was current Michael Jordan playing young Michael Jordan, and then the North Carolina Michael Jordan pops up at the end. Yeah, I was a little disappointed. And Chunky Soup.
Mean Joe Green?
Donovan McNabb's mom didn't make the list.
The Mean Joe Green one was ahead of my day. Like, that one, when I checked
I'm 26. It was certainly ahead of my day, but it certainly should be on this list.
It was number 1 on most lists, but this is a Levine's list, BK, as you're getting used to, and usually they're not very popular. I've seen replays of that commercial. I can't remember actually seeing that commercial. All these other ones I've actually seen.
I can't believe that Chunky Soup and Donovan McNabb mom didn't make your list.
Donovan McNabb's mom
held it down for about 7 years, and Cliff Paul is very upset he didn't make any of this. Cliff Paul should have been on this list.
Your honorable mention just smoked my list like a Snoop blunt.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into the Chiefs and the Cowboys and how they are handling contract extensions in two completely different ways. But first, let's give you a chance to win a prize.
Quiz. I'm sorry, but all questions must be submitted in writing.
Another really good commercial, Terry Tate, office linebacker.
And Leon Sandcastle, the number 1 pick for the Chiefs. My list sucked.
I thought that
my
one
list
was terrible.
Terrible.
I thought that one was terrible. I didn't like the Leon Sandcastle at all. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into the Chiefs and the Cowboys. But first, today's pop quiz is brought to you by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. The winner gets a pair of tickets to FAC Fight Night, August 24th. MMA fighters from all over the Midwest converge for an epic battle. It's 98.9 The Rock. Present FAC Fight Night. You want to see 15 bouts of nonstop MMA action?
Well, I do.
You can do so at the Silverstein Eye Center Arena. Tickets start as low as $11. Think about it. For $11, you can see 15 fights. I mean, that's an excellent value right there. Today's pop quiz is a movie. Take it away, BK.
No caller ID. That's him.
I don't really want to talk to Nick
Fury.
Answer
the phone.
Why?
Because if you don't talk to him, then I have to talk to him. I don't want to talk to him.
Well, why don't you want to talk to him?
Because I'm scared. Just answer the phone. You sent Nick Fury to voicemail?
Yeah.
You don't send Nick Fury to voicemail.
Did you hear that? They're calling me. I gotta go.
If you know what movie that is, be calling number 6-913-576-7610, and the tickets are yours. Coming up in 2 minutes, don't turn that dial. The Chiefs and the Cowboys are going about their contract extensions in two completely different ways. We'll discuss it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.